The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. We have a busy show. Pedro Gomez from Los Angeles. Man, if you're a Cubs fan today, oh, I'm not gloating over this. It's just last night, like the world was coming to an end. It was an apocalypse, and it's only 2-1, but you guys can't hit. And you know this, and I know this. If you're a Cubs fan, it comes down to one pitch being left up in the zone, and otherwise you're down 3. Maybe down 3. Back to game 1. So Pedro's in Los Angeles. Tonight is game number 4. The excitement continues. Dodgers and Cubs. I'm not so interested in what's going on with Cleveland other than Trevor Bauer, which was fine. But I'll talk to Pedro about that. And then ESPN college football analyst Brock Huard is going to be with us as well. We'll talk with Brock. So looking forward to that. That comes up at about 10:35 too. So the college football end with Brock on Washington and also with the Seahawks, them coming into the Valley as well. Looking forward to that. All right, so some of the things on my mind today on the show, some of the things I want to talk about, brought to you by Subway. Subway, eat fresh. It's always good to have Subway, part of what we do here at Sports 360 AZ. You've got catering coming up, things that you need to get accomplished. You're in the middle of business meetings right now. Think Subway. Subway, eat fresh. Appreciate their support. So Rich Hill last night in 3 relievers. The Dodgers take out the Cubs. That's of interest to me. We're going to get into the NFL owners meetings a little bit later on in the show today. They're down in Houston. They're actually trying to figure out why the TV ratings are down. The Cardinal number, Eric, did you see the Cardinal number the other night?
I did not.
It was bad. It was really bad nationally. And it was tied into what had been discussed by Sean McDonough, the voice of Monday Night Football, just ripping the quality of play, as he should. And John Gruden as well, and all the flags. Number was not good the other night. Monday Night Football, it doesn't have anything to do with the Cardinals per se. I think it just had to do with the quality of the game or lack thereof.
People don't want to watch Ryan Fitzpatrick, I guess. And hey, they don't have to anymore.
They don't have to. You're out of here.
Geno Smith, step up. You are the next starting quarterback for the 1-5 New York Jets.
Don't you think he's going to get fired at some point because he can't find a quarterback? Like, that's the way it works in the NFL. If you can't get a quarterback or you can't develop a quarterback, You're going to be a dead man walking in
most
cases.
They have 4 on the roster, and none of them are good.
None of them.
It's like in college. Sometimes they say if you have 2 quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks.
No, that's right. Well, and there's been some people that said that about Arizona State, and I don't agree with that. You know, like in Tucson, Rich Rod's trying to keep it together with baling wire and stringing cans down there, quarterback. You tell me, anybody's got to have a walk-on backup tight end play quarterback, you're not going to win. I don't care who you are. So there's that's going on. And on the college football scene, so Todd Graham yesterday disputed Mike Leach's assertion that they're stealing signs. To me, this was a story that was brought up a year ago, so it's been brought up again. He talked about, like, microphones being hidden around. And do I think that stuff goes on? Absolutely, I do. Absolutely, I do. Cheating is part of sports. You won't like hearing that. You won't agree with me on that. But look, if it's basketball and you're holding a guy inside and you get whistled for a foul and you're going to throw your arms up in the air and complain and whine and cry, because that's usually what happens in the NBA, is guys never commit fouls, ever commit fouls. And so it used to be we joke about soccer players looking like they got shot by an arrow in their hamstring. Well, now that stuff happens in basketball. But of course, they're trying to get away with something. You know, in baseball, it's guys on the mound doing something to the ball. They're scuffing the ball. They're doing something. It's a form of cheating. They got caught. Stealing signs has already been asserted in the Cubs-Dodgers series. That is a form of cheating. And so throughout sports, there's going to be ways to get rather than calling it cheating, I call it a competitive advantage. It's a nice, wholesome term. It doesn't have that cheater. No, I've got a competitive advantage over you. So if Todd Graham is able to figure out and crack the Da Vinci Code on how it is they're able to go do something Is that that, oh, I've got a better coach and a better system over here than what you have over there? Is it unethical or is it a competitive advantage? Is counting cards a competitive advantage when you get thrown out of a casino? So, you know, I see this story on Washington State's end, and Mike Leach, he was with us yesterday, says, you know, I tell the truth because I don't want to try to remember the lie that I told. And I respect that about him. So if he's upset at Todd Graham, look, on the surface, Arizona State should get whacked again on Saturday night. They should. Washington State's offense is really good. We're going to talk about Luke Falk a little bit later on in the show today because that could be a player that the Cardinals look at. The Cardinals at some point have to draft quarterback, don't they? I mean, just what we've seen this year. And so you have Luke Falk coming into the Valley on Saturday night. I have to assume that the press row, there's a spot where there's scouts from teams, is going to be just loaded with NFL scouts to see Luke Falk. We'll get into that a little bit later on the show. But on that note with Washington State, so Eric showed me this little bit of a video yesterday, and I don't know if you guys have seen it or not. It's been floating around online, and it's very funny. It's very, very funny. So UCLA played Washington State on Saturday night in Pullman. UCLA and head coach Jim Mora. Jim, I think, is losing a little bit of his swag out there, and I've known Jim for a long time. He was with the Chargers when I did their was a part of their broadcast. He's their secondary coach. But, you know, the Bruins have this little chip on their shoulder, big chip on their shoulder. They want to try to intimidate guys. So Gabe Marks, the wide receiver for Washington State, was asked why it was that UCLA, before they played Washington State last Saturday night in Pullman, UCLA ran out on the field and warmed up where Washington State was supposed to warm up. This hilarity ensued. This was earlier.
UCLA, warming up on the field again, whatever, that whole thing. Do you guys feel like you're getting the respect you deserve as a team for what you've done?
I mean, I'm not coming back next year to be able to play them again, but I don't know what their deal is. They kind of come off as bad guys when they do things like that. I don't know if they do that to everybody, but it's just kind of like, you know, it's kind of douchey, you know? Is that, like, okay to say?
We can put it on TV.
You can. I mean, don't cut that. Let's be honest. There, it makes you look like, you know, you're trying to be tough because everyone thinks that, you know, because you live in Westwood and you wear baby blue that you're not tough. And it makes you look less tough because you're trying too hard. It's just weird, you know? You don't have to do that.
That is so good. Is it okay if I say that?
Sometimes, Brad, and you know this just as well as I do, we cover athletes in college.
Sure.
And some of them are just completely unfiltered. Like, people will say, who's your favorite ASU player to cover? And I say Andrew Walter, because he was so well-spoken, he was so blunt, and he was so honest. Gabe Marks is a senior wide receiver. He's been through the wars at Washington State, the really bad teams, the sort of good teams, and now they've won four games in a row. And I bet he's been waiting. I bet he knew he was going to get asked about that, and he thought about the question for like 3 or 4 seconds, and then just started going off unfiltered. And it's just nice because I'm sure there are a lot of other teams in the Pac-12 that might view UCLA the exact same way. But no one's going to say anything, but he did.
It's a little douchey.
Can I say that?
It's fine.
Oh, don't cut that out. I mean, that's the truth.
But it was great. It was just when he looks over at the poor person for Washington State's got to be like, oh.
And his face is just stone cold when he's saying all this. Just,
yeah.
You could almost feel his eyes just piercing through the media when he's answering that.
I'm looking right at Westwood.
We hate these MFers so much, and I'm going to do my best to be as PC as possible. Good stuff. Washington State, they always have like a cast of characters. You know, like they got Leach, and they have Gabe Marks, and they have Luke Falk, and they throw it like, remember a couple years ago they had like 86 passing attempts in a game?
Yeah,
it should be fun. I'm glad I'm covering that. Thank you to the Pac-12 for making that 7 o'clock start. So
what, you know what? If it were at 2 o'clock, though, you'd still be. They'd still
take
be
the whole.
Day.
I mean, it's either
going to
take the whole day or the whole night.
Right,
so
right,
it's going
right.
to take the whole night. But I love college football. So
are you looking forward to that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm feeling like if ASU wins at home against Washington State this year, with that defense being as bad as they are, we threw the numbers out the other day. And I don't want to hear that, well, that was just Texas Tech. No, that's not just Texas Tech. This is the sample size of the season, all right? That'd be a good win for ASU because I don't know how many wins they have left.
ASU's defense has sort of been covered up by the fact that ASU's offense has been able to move the ball and score points against bad defenses. Defenses.
You said it, not me.
Texas Tech, Cal. Then they run into a Colorado team who's pretty stout. And you see what happens.
Did you see what Vontaze Burfict did to the Patriots?
I did.
So he just got fined $75K.
Wow.
He wasn't suspended. Won't be suspended.
$75,000. But it sure looked like it was a dirty hit.
Come on, Eric. There comes a point where you got to take somebody and put him off the field. And I know he was out to start the season. It doesn't excuse it. And this goes back to the Vontaze stuff that was covered up when he was at ASU.
Yeah, that kid hasn't. I mean, he hasn't learned his lesson.
No. And that's the problem when people, when he was at ASU, looked the other way and said, well, you got to understand his upbringing, his background, and, you know, things he went through. I am willing to accept that. But nobody, when he was at Arizona State, put the hammer down on him. And by the way, just so I'm clear on this, when Brock Osweiler bolted when Todd Graham was hired and never gave Todd a chance, and then he was upset up in Denver, you know, when he plays the Broncos this week, I hope the Broncos kick his tail from one side to the other because he came across as petulant when he was here. Like, I'm too good for this. I don't need Todd Graham here. I can go to the NFL. Yeah, you stood with a clipboard and a baseball cap in your hand, and you pulled out a miraculous win the other night. I'll give you that. But there's just something about how he's handled himself that I'm not that big on. You know, people are like, why don't you give him more love? I don't need to give love. I don't get paid to give love. Bill Belichick threw out his Microsoft Surface, threw it away, and went on this rant, five-minute rant yesterday about why he does not accept technology. I want to talk about that a little bit later on in the show.
Microsoft, I'm guessing, spends a couple bucks a year with the NFL, right?
It was
40 billion or some ridiculous number that they advertised to the NFL.
But when Al Michaels said he's over there on his iPad going through everything, whoops.
Ooh, oh!
And now Belichick is like, I am not using this. It's technology. It's going to break. It's going to screw up. I can just see it in the course of battle. This damn thing, boom. Sorry, there's like, I don't know, 20 other people in the stadium that are on their phones right now all texting and doing data. So you just need a better signal. You need a bigger pipe there. That caught my eye too. But up next, Pedro Gomez. We're going to talk with Pedro in Los Angeles about where things are with the Cubs and Dodgers. And if you're a Cubs fan, you're just, you know, you're DOA or not. And I also want to get to Pedro's opinions on the Diamondbacks general manager hire and throw some names by him as potential managers here in Arizona. That's next.
It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sesmat.
Pedro Gomez joins us from Los Angeles. It'll be game number four tonight, Dodgers and Cubs. Pedro is busy opening up a, I don't want to say suicide hotline, that's a little insensitive, but just a talking Cubs fans off the ledge hotline, maybe the best way to go. You do a lot of these shows. I see, well, I shouldn't say a lot. You do these types of shows from around the country, and you've been on in Chicago before, correct?
Yes, I was just on actually over, I want to say Friday.
You're on Friday. And so in Friday, when you're on with them, the pulse in Chicago is we're just going to roll. We're going to go to the World Series, and this is all going to come to an end because we're the Cubs, and we've got it all figured out, right?
Absolutely. That's exactly. You know, it started early on. I mean, they had such a great April.
Yep.
And just rolled the entire summer.
Okay, so what do you think the tone is and the tenor today in Chicago? It's got to be just sickness.
Probably very close to what you described at the beginning here. you know, they always think the glass is half empty. They never think it's half full. They always are waiting for the worst. And, you know, when you see 18 consecutive innings without a run, with only six hits during that time span, you know, there might be a little reason here. And let's face it, that they're facing another left-handed pitcher today for the third straight game. They have not done well against lefties, and that goes back to the series against the Giants, because Madison Bumgarner didn't pitch great, but he did win Game 3 in the Giants series.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Moore threw eight just sparkling innings until he came out of the game, and the Giants bullpen imploded, and you know the Cubs ended up winning in the ninth inning. Game 2 here in this series, they face a lefty in Kershaw and lose. Last night, they face a lefty in Rich Hill and lose. And now they're facing a lefty tonight in Julio Urias. So it's not looking good.
In terms of Kershaw, you've seen a lot of baseball. Have you seen a stretch here of postseason baseball as dramatic as what Kershaw's been a part of here in the last week?
Bumgarner back in 2014 or 2012. He certainly comes to mind. But, it's interesting because all the talk of Kershaw was always, oh, great regular season, and can't put it together in the month of October. Well, that's gone forever now, I think. He has certainly stepped up, and when you see what he's done in this postseason, it's very reminiscent of things like Bob Gibson, Mickey Lolich back in the day with the Tigers, of Sandy Koufax, of Madison Bumgarner, of the best postseasons that anyone has ever had. And that includes Earl Hershiser back in 1988, the last time the Dodgers went to the World Series and then won the World Series. So, you know, you can ride a big horse a lot in October as long as there's at least one and a half other supporting cast members, and right now that's what the Dodgers are getting.
It's funny, Pedro, because on social media there's been a lot about, can you believe Jansen is throwing this many pitches and Kershaw being out there, and that the agents for these pitchers, or just agents in general, are cringing that this may be the sign of, you know what, you could have a starter come out of a bullpen during the regular season and this is going to transform the game. I don't know if that's just too much being made out of the last week or even this postseason, but do you agree on any of that?
Well, I just think that in the month of October, players decide, I'm doing whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
It does not matter. You know, you get really the most unselfish of a player in the month of October. And I know they all say, look, it's all about the team. But the reality is that in October is probably one of the only times that they really mean it. It really is when you check your ego and say, I'll do whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. If we can get a ring, let's go. You saw it with Madison Bumgarner, not just in 12 and 14, but he did it again this year. You've seen it with Kershaw this year. You see it in the month of October where players do say, I don't care what it is.
Right.
Use me however you want. Remember CC Sabathia, who got traded to the Milwaukee Brewers back in 2011, was pitching on 3 days rest several times. And the Brewers went all the way to the NLCS. You just see down the stretch in September and into October, players decide, I'll do whatever it takes.
All right, one other question about the series, and that is, can the Cubs pull out of this, in your opinion?
You know, they still have a very, very good roster. They have the best roster in baseball. But you can also get neutralized by great pitching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 1988, the Oakland A's had, by far, the best ball club in all of baseball. And the Dodgers handcuffed them at a time when their pitching just stood out. So, you know, over the last 21 years, four times only has the club with the best record won the World Series. The Cubs have the pieces. Now it's just a matter of, tonight I think is enormous, because if they fall behind 3-1, I don't think that's a hole they can crawl out of. Yeah. So tonight is really the series for the Cubs. If they tie it 2-2, I think they all can collectively take a breath and say, whew, okay, let's go. Here's something that somebody from another club told me last night, though. The one issue the Cubs have had is they have not played pressure baseball all year.
That's true.
Remember that they had that huge April into May. They were like 27-7 out of the gate and had a huge lead, huge cushion in the NL Central. Never really had to play pressure baseball all year because they were so good. Now all of a sudden you get into a short series and they're playing pressure baseball for the first time all year, whereas other clubs, like the Dodgers, had to play pressure ball because they had to hold off the Giants in order to win the division. And that may be affecting the Cubs right now.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Pedro Gomez joining us, ESPN Baseball Insider Analyst in Los Angeles. Tonight it'll be game number 4, Dodgers hosting the Cubs. Let's switch over to the hometown heroes here. Mike Hazen gets announced as the general manager. Your immediate reaction was?
Very similar GM that seems to be filling that role for a lot of clubs right now. You know, the Ivy-educated, analytics-driven type of GM. And I've heard good things. I will say that. I've heard good things about him. But, you know, again, the Diamondbacks are on their 7th or 8th GM now.
Right.
And the club is only 20-some years old. Close to 20. That's a lot of GMs in a very short period of time. And, you know, I saw that, you know, the Diamondbacks believe, hey, we got it right this time. Well, let's see, you know, because they've got to sell over the community, not the other way around. And the only way to do that is to see if in fact they do start to make strides. Again, you know, player development is the key to every successful ball club.
Let me throw some manager names by you that have surfaced early. Obviously, when they hired Hazen, Torrey Lovello's name, bench coach with the Red Sox. What do you think of Torrey Lovello as a potential manager?
Love Torrey. Really, really love Torrey. And, you know, he's never done it other than when John Farrell got sick and had to leave the ball club. But everybody that I talked to with the Red Sox during that time span, players, I mean, said that Torrey will be a very good manager down the road. So I think the role of Torrey Lovello, and I know that people inside that Red Sox clubhouse feel equally the same. And there's a reason Dave Dombrowski did not allow Torrey Lovello, when they re-signed him a year ago, the one stipulation was you can't leave for another manager's job during that first year. Mm-hmm. Well, the first year's up. So now Torrey Lovello is able to leave should that happen. He doesn't, I think he and Hazen have a pretty good relationship. Would not surprise me if that's the guy.
Bud Black's name has surfaced from my understanding, just talking with agents and all that stuff. Your view of Bud Black?
Again, tremendous, tremendous person, tremendous manager who really did a lot with a little. You know, his rosters in San Diego were so, so limited. And he still squeezed a lot out of that. Let's not forget that they went down the last day of the season in 2010 and lost out to the Giants on the last day of the season. Otherwise, the 2010 Giants don't happen. Just a guy that players absolutely play hard for all the time. He is refreshingly honest and will manage again. If he's the guy, another great choice.
Mm-hmm. You have any names out there that you've heard in the last week? I know you've been focused on series and being on planes, but through your course of conversations, have some other managerial candidates come up around the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, unfortunately, you're right, Brett. I've been so consumed with this series.
Yeah.
I haven't really been able to do any reporting on that front. But, you know, the usual suspects obviously will be mentioned. But I think that I have a feeling Hazen's going to go against the grain maybe a little bit and go with somebody that has not managed before, and that's why those two names. I mean, Buddy Black has managed.
Yep.
But he's only managed one time before, so it's not like he has a huge track record of jumping around from club to club. He had a really good spell in San Diego. You know, pitching is so important right now, and Bud Black, being a former pitcher, is one of the very, very few pitchers. I think right now John Farrell is the only ex-pitcher that is a manager. Otherwise, it's all position players. And Bud Black did have some success because it's really like having another pitching coach.
Sure.
As well as your pitching coach.
Sure.
And it wouldn't surprise me if he brought Dick Baldly over from San Diego if he got the job. And Baldly is considered a fantastic pitching coach. So I would keep an eye on Bud Black, and I would keep an eye on Torey Lovullo as the top two candidates.
Let's check off that. Appreciate your time. I know it's busy for you. Stay well. Thanks.
Okay, Brad.
It's Pedro Gomez in Los Angeles. In Los Angeles, the City of Angels, Dodgers and Cubs. Game number four, that is, tonight. Brock Huard is next, ESPN college football analyst from 710 ESPN in Seattle. Also, of course, does a great job on the college football front with ESPN. I'm going to talk to him about the best team he's seen in person and what is going on with the Seahawks as they come down here on Sunday night. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Welcome back. So this last weekend, my son, who got married in March, and they moved to Seattle, and he comes down here to get away from the bad weather that was rolling. And he said, you know, there's this guy on the radio. You've had him on your show before, but I've now actually heard him in person, Brock Huard. And I said, well, that's all well and good. Is he any good? And he said, oh, he's really good. And I said, really? Shocking, stunning. I said, Brock's a rock star in our book. We've had Brock. We've called Brock the riser in the industry since we've been doing this for the last 5 years. And so it's good that there's an endorsement from a Sussmat who's in Seattle, for one thing. Two, it's good to talk to you, ESPN college football analyst, ESPN 710 in Seattle. How are you?
I am great, but eventually what rises must come down. And I figured since we hadn't talked all season, the only feedback you get in this business, and you know that, Brad, is whether you get a callback. So I figured maybe right. I had risen and then the balloon popped. I was done, and you've moved on to brighter and much better.
Get out of here. Shut up. What are you talking about? All right, best college football team. We'll get into the Seahawks and the Huskies because you have two really compelling stories, and the Cougars too. But nationally, the best college football team you've seen this year in person?
In person would be Ohio State. Now, I'll get a chance to see Louisville Saturday, and looking forward to that and seeing the best player in college football, Lamar Jackson, who is just super stupid fast. And it's fast off the field and in street clothes, and it's even faster on it. So I can't wait to watch him actually in person. And a Louisville team, by the way, that is loaded in lots of spots. I mean, their O-line, D-line, and my film prep and getting ready for it. That's a really complete team, and I think one of the five best in America. But in person, I saw Ohio State, and even though they didn't play tremendous and JT Barrett couldn't throw it that afternoon, I saw them. That is still a team with championship DNA and fiber and Urban Meyer. My goodness gracious, Brad, when you can list off the four games he's lost in 5 years, he doesn't lose. The moment gets big, he responds. His team does so accordingly. So, you know, much like these championship teams that have been there and done it, it matters. It matters, and his resume speaks for itself.
Let me go back to something you said earlier. You used the term super stupid fast. Can you please use that as your analyst work when you do an ESPN college studio show, or have you used that one before? Because that's really good.
I think I have.
Super stupid fast.
Yeah, watch Saturday. It'll be an early kick on ABC, and yeah. I bet you at some point I'll fit that in, and I'll even wink. No one will see it, but I'll kind of wink at you, Brad, and say, there you go, buddy.
That is, that's a little relationship between Brock and I, and that's as far as it goes. talk with Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst, of course, host of Morning Show in Seattle as well. Huskies, Seahawks, better story in your view so far this season?
That would be the Huskies. And much like those teams I referenced earlier, and Alabama's the most complete team in college football because their defense is on a historic tear, unlike anything I think we've seen defensively in college football, at least in my 10 years of doing this for a living. They are unbelievable. Washington's complete. Washington does not have a hole. David Shaw has said as much this year on those teleconferences and said as much coming out of that game. There really, Brad, is no weakness. And you saw this coming. You saw a season ago, freshmen come to life, a defense that was number one in the conference that returned everybody. They made an incredible commitment this offseason to their strength and conditioning numbers. They're off the charts. And they are the most complete team out west. And if they play to their standard, and they've set that standard high, but if they play to their capabilities, they should run the table this year. There's not a team that's better than them. Now, they've got to go into a couple brutal environments, and they may lose, you know, and you never know with injuries and everything else, or they may not play on a given Saturday with 18 to 22-year-olds to their standard. But if they play their A game with their roster, they go undefeated, and that's what's in front of them in the second half of the season.
Okay, so you've seen Ohio State in person. Could Washington play with Ohio
State?
Yeah, really?
Oh, toe-to-toe. Oh, 100%. In fact, the Ohio State coaches, Luke Fickell, the D coordinator, and I were chatting after our meeting. He said, man, I had to put on that Washington-Stanford tape. You know, I had to watch it, and people all around college football did. You know, that was on a Friday night. So then, you know, a bunch of folks on Friday nights are flipping around channels, and those coaches get a chance at times to watch. But he wanted to go back, like many of these, you know, top coaches in these programs. I got to go back and watch that game tape. And when he did, he saw the same thing that I have seen this entire season on that game tape. You can't block them. I mean, you've got four guys on your D-line that beat five every time. And when you win that math equation, you win games. You win Super Bowls. You win national championships. And they've got it. They've got a defensive line that's the envy of everybody in their conference. It's the envy of probably everybody but Alabama. Very short list as far as front fours go in all of college football, Brad. They're that dominant.
Okay, Jake Browning, Heisman Trophy candidate.
Yes. Yeah, when you lead America in touchdowns and efficiency and ratings and your team's rolling and scoring the way they are and taking care of the ball the way he is and busting 12-year streaks against Oregon and playing at the level he is, yes. Now, they're going to face much better competition in the second half of the year. The weather is going to get worse. The Gotti numbers are going to slow down. But if he continues to win, and that is the whole key in the Heisman, you have to win 10 or more games and you have to put up Gotti statistics. And, you know, I think he's got a chance for sure to win. Just how silly those video game numbers remain, we'll continue to see just how long he remains in that Heisman competition.
Brock Huard with us, switching gears over to the Seahawks. No surprise where they are at this point in your mind?
No surprise that they're 4-1. It was a much more favorable schedule than a year ago where they had to go on the road twice and they had all the instability with their roster and players and Cam Chancellor holdout. No surprise because the schedule was much more favorable. How they have gotten here, the fact that Russell Wilson is hobbled, playing at half speed, that they've been able to find a passing game with an inability to really establish their running game without Thomas Rawls. Probably would not have thought with all the missing pieces it would look exactly like this. But it goes back to what I said with Ohio State and Urban Meyer. When you are a championship mindset and you have been there and done it, you see it in New England. It doesn't matter who the parts are. As long as the quarterback and head coach are there, a lot of other things seem to fall in place year after year after year. And quite a credit to Pete and to Russell now. As Carolina's fallen off the map, as other teams have struggled, it's been a five-year run, a historic run, a franchise first to ever be in a position like they continue to put themselves in. But, man, do they believe, no matter what it looks like at times and no matter who's wearing the uniform, that they're going to get it done.
Okay, so in what we saw Sunday with Richard Sherman, now from a distance you look at the tape and you see all the analysis and you're thinking, wow, that's really over the top. You're there. Is it not over the top what he did on Sunday? Is that what it's all about with the Seahawks?
It's what it's all about. And Pete Carroll was quoted the great Aerosmith earlier this week with us when he said, I like living on the edge. And that's where they live. They live out on that edge, man. They give their players more freedom of expression. They always have. You know, they lived on the edge with Marshawn Lynch for many years and the way he went about his business on and off the field. Pete doesn't mind living there. A lot of coaches would be terribly uncomfortable with any of it. Most coaches that I was ever around loved to keep things in a box and have it status quo and do it the way we do and do it in this routine, and that's not Pete Carroll. And they spend an immense amount of money and resources on sports psychologists, on psychologists, on everybody that they can bring in from the outside to make that group, you know, go the way they go, to have the individuality they do in the ultimate team sport. So not outside the box. In fact, right on that edge where Pete likes to live.
Stay well. Appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
You got it, Brad.
It's Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst, ESPN 710 AM in Seattle, getting it done as well. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So Luke Falk is in town this coming Saturday. Arizona State taking on Washington State. And I bring up Luke Falk because if you look at the quarterback class for this coming draft, and you look at players like Deshaun Watson was supposed to be the guy that people were all focused in on, and I would say Deshaun Watson has had an up-and-down season. Luke Falk comes from the spread offense. Spread offense quarterbacks, the MMQBs, Emily Kaplan did a terrific piece on it, talking about Luke Falk. And how Luke Falk may be one of those players that can work through the whole idea of spread offenses. You know, they talked about Brandon Whedon and how he hasn't been around and some of the other spread offense quarterbacks in the league. But we're going to see Luke Falk on Saturday night, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of NFL people there. I would have to imagine the Cardinals would be there. And whether they are there or not, they'll see him in other places. The point is, at some point, wouldn't we want to see the Cardinals, rather than sitting there, unless, Eric, they already know they've got a veteran that's coming in. A kid here like Luke Falk, when you see him and what he's doing out on the field, does Luke Falk make sense for the Cardinals to look at, to draft? And he's going to be here on Saturday night. The Seahawks people are, I'm sure, going to be over there as well. I hear there's going to be a lot of Seattle media at the game, too. Does Luke Falk do anything for you as an NFLer?
To me, he's a system quarterback. To me, he's just a plug-and-play, the next guy that came out of the air raid offense that put up really big numbers, and it was just okay or average at best in the NFL. I'd rather have Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech because he plays in a similar system, but he's 6'3", 230 pounds, can throw the ball 70 yards in the air, and he's playing on a really bad team and putting up really good numbers.
Who's that? Kevin Cobb was in that same offense.
Yep.
If we're thinking of guys that have been in
Kevin Cobb is a little bit like Luke Falk. That's a pretty decent comparison, and Cobb was a good quarterback.
He had concussion stuff.
He was.
I mean, that's the facts on Kevin Cobb. I guess it's, do the Cardinals look at it and say, look, we've got this quarterback thing figured out. We're going to bring in X, Y, or Z. Because agents know. It's not like they just pick up the phone in 2016 and say, oh, hey, tomorrow we're going to sign somebody. This stuff is years in the making or months in the making. We are going to leave at the end of this year or after this next year, and we would like our guy to be with your guys. That's how it is. So then it's just an interesting name to keep an eye on.
Well, and they don't have their quarterback of the future on the roster
right
now. I mean, clearly it's not Drew Stanton.
No, but if they have somebody outside of the draft that they're looking at, whose contract is going to become available, agent winks, not even winks, they just work deals out. A lot of stuff is worked out ahead of time. It's like Tony Romo to the Jets. So there's this whole narrative now that the Jets can't find a quarterback, and the Cowboys are sitting there with Dak Prescott. So why not trade Tony Romo to the Jets before the trade deadline? It makes for a lot of fun to sit here behind a microphone and throw it out there and play Fantasyland stuff. And I guess if the Jets were smart and savvy, they'd go after it. But these are the Jets. When was the last time the Jets were relevant for an extended period of time? Doesn't happen. They're the ones that draft these quarterbacks that can't play. Just the way it is. What else? So Jimmy Vaccaro is in the news cycle today a little bit, in a positive way. We have our last debate tonight. I am not watching. I do not care. I've already heard enough. I'm not going to get any more answers. I'm not going to make my mind up off of what happens tonight. But because it's Jimmy Vaccaro, this was put up earlier today in Vegas, and that is Jimmy being asked by ABC News, give us the odds on the presidential race. When I love Jimmy, and I've done stuff with Jimmy for many, 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 many years, and he is the best in the business, and he comes on with us every week. Not everybody gets approached by ABC News saying, hey, we want to have you talk about the election. That's Jimmy
Vaccaro. I wonder if South Point, I saw on the Today Show this morning, one of the casinos there is doing the Donald Trump will wear a red tie 5-1.
Oh,
Donald
sure.
Trump will wear a green tie 10-1.
Awesome.
Donald Trump will wear a black tie 15-1. I'm sure that up at South Point they're doing that, but we're scheduled to have him on tomorrow. Hopefully we'll get him, and that will be an interesting – usually it's all football, but hey, I mean, the with the debate in Vegas, I mean, we have to ask him about the debate, right?
And he probably can't even show his political leanings on this whole deal.
No, I don't think so.
And if you're Trump, if he sees on the hey, go over there and go over to that casino and tell me what the odds are on red tie. Comes back. It's 20-1. 20-1. Go put $1 million on that.
It's a great point.
And
it's a great point.
And let me call my buddy. Hey, so-and-so. Hey, Sussmat. I'm wearing red. Put it down. Wearing red. Go over to the casino.
You hear about those types of things before the Super Bowl, too.
Yeah.
Like, what color is the Gatorade going to be?
Sure.
And someone with the Broncos, you know, equipment department says,
yep,
you know what? We're going to make this Gatorade orange.
Yes.
And we're going to predetermine this.
And I'm going to retire.
Correct. Correct. I'm not going to make the bet, but a guy I know is going to make a really big bet on the color of the Gatorade at the Super Bowl.
We're not conspiracy theorists here. It's just, this is how sports works, right? It's, we have fun doing this. That's good.
It's not what you know, it's who you know.
I guess. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now at Sports360AZ.com. Pro, college, high school, podcasts, great guests during the day, our show that we do every day at 10 a.m. And we partner with the Arizona Republic on that. And then we turn it right back around and the show repeats over and over and over as you're watching us. We write up some of the stories around that, chase stories on the high school, college, and pro level as well. Things that we see, it's not going to be the usual stuff. You can go find it, I don't know, 500,000 other websites of a breakdown of the upcoming game. Stuff's everywhere, a little different than that. Thanks for being with us.